All right. Hello and welcome to the Tala. Still no theme music. Still no working Facebook page. Well, there is a working Facebook page, but I hate social media and haven't done anything really with it. So I can't be bothered with it. To answer questions on the podcast at all, I am, of course, with a new podcast the host now, which I've been with for a little while now, a couple of months at least. It seems to be going all right. They're a reasonably happy host, I think. You're welcome to... I don't know where you're downloading it from, you see. Different people are obviously downloading from a variety of places. You can still get me on iTunes. No problem at all, and people are getting me on iTunes. There's one or two other providers seem to have popped up that have just got the podcast that I wasn't really fully aware of. So I didn't know about that. So there's a variety of bits and bats that are coming up. But really, I'm with Podmatic. Podomatic, spelled P-O-D-O-M-A-T-I-C. Podomatic. Now, Podomatic have... You can follow me on there. You can put likes on the different episodes and you can send me comments. And I think I'm happier with that than Facebook. So if you want to say anything or you want to just wave at me or like an episode, which is nice of you if you do, then use that sort of hosting engine of mine. Otherwise, just picking up on one or two little bits of comments and things that people give me feedback. It's been a couple of months. Yes, it has. Sorry, I'm still in the middle of moving. Well, I've moved now, but everything's in boxes and just trying to get the house right. So I haven't really had time just to sit down and do one of these. The poems... would I like to do some poetry at the beginning of the episodes? No, I wouldn't, because if I do a poem, it tends to be different to the stories. They're a bit more grown up as well, so once the kids have listened to a story, perhaps the poetry is a little bit more for grown-ups, if you like that kind of thing. The poetry content, somebody said that the poetry content's a little bit aspic, a bit bitter. Yeah, maybe that's just how the mood is taking me at the moment. Had a bit of a negative experience with somebody. This is children listen to this as well, so I'll be very careful with my word. Had a bit of a negative experience with somebody just making some stuff up because they did. And it got me down a tiny bit, but you know, life goes on, and what goes around comes around. So if you have a go at somebody, I always believe it comes around and bites you firmly on the backside, and I'll look forward to that occurring to the aforementioned individual. What else in life? The story today, you're asking? The story today is one that I found. It's an original. It's definitely mine. But I'd forgotten even I'd written it. It came out with the moving of house, actually. It was lying in the bottom of a box. So it was probably something that I wrote, I think, when I was a student, back in the back end of the 80s. And I've not come across it since. There it was. And I thought, yeah, okay, we'll give it a bit of a go. It's called... And There Was a Dragon, which is an interesting title, and there is indeed a dragon in it as well. I think it was written around about the time, or just before, I did the Tale of the Most Excellent Halima, which of course is one of the podcasts that I did, and one or two people have been kind enough to say that they liked. So it belongs in that era, that sort of... timeline. It's one that I'm not very familiar with. As I say, even though I wrote it, I'm not very familiar with it, which is interesting as well. which is interesting in itself, yes, but we'll see how it goes on. Other little bits and pieces, sorry, while I remember, otherwise I do forget, and you might not hear from me again for another month or so. No, I don't have any adverts on this podcast. No, I don't make any of the requests some podcasters do for funding. I have no donations page or anything like that up. I might do. Could do. I'm not adverse to somebody, say, sending me a couple of quid on PayPal and saying, here, I'll buy you a coffee. But I've not got a donations button up at the moment. A couple of reasons for that, really. One, I just kind of do these because I like telling the stories. So I enjoy the fact that I do them. And if people are enjoying them, that's good enough for me. I've never said I'll make money out of it. But I know that some podcasters actually do make quite a decent amount and buy good equipment and everything. And I'm struggling along here using, to be honest, awful audio equipment, which definitely doesn't help if you're doing podcasts, because you need it to be nice and crisp and clear. For those people who are kind of interested in technological bits and pieces, I'm essentially using an app called Opinion on an iPhone, which you then have to download, move around and then send it over to my host for the podcast. And it's a far from ideal way of doing it. So, yeah, I might try to get some proper podcasting equipment, which would be very, very nice. And I don't have the listener base at the moment to attract adverts. I think there's about 300 of you out there listening to these, if I check the figures. So, I mean, it's okay, you know, it's not bad, but it's not exactly gonna set any advertiser aflame. And also, do we really want an interruption now with somebody jumping around talking about Mars bars or anything like that? Although other chocolate bars are, of course, available. I don't think we do. And that wasn't product placement either, by the way. It was just me being flippant. If anybody did want to buy me a coffee, and say thanks for the podcast, Mark, I enjoyed it, have a coffee on me, you could always PayPal me £2, something like that. My PayPal is lowercase letters emchambers 1966 at gmail.com. emchambers 1966 at gmail.com is my PayPal. £2, and I'll have a cup of coffee on you. That's kind of you. So, on to the story. And there was a dragon. Okay. Market for this one. Older children, probably. Older kids. Wrote it for older kids. Might do a grown-up story next time. I'm considering an Edgar Allan Poe. A bit of horror. So it could well be far more grown-up next time. But here we are. A children's one this time, okay? Welcome to a small, rather cramped and dusty house, in which there lived Baba the Magician. Actually, I'm using the term magician, but it's rather misleading. He did indeed have Babaji, magician and caster of fine spells for all your household needs, written upon his door. And he had all the books and potions that any aspiring man of magic could hope for. Unfortunately, the truth was that he was a failure, and he'd never in his entire life cast a single spell or mumbled one incantation that had ever remotely worked. It was something of a surprise to him, therefore, that when one evening he sat back in his old leather chair and mumbled a few scarcely remembered words whilst lighting a candle, and with very little ceremony, and certainly no bang, there manifested in front of him a rather large dragon. It was even a greater surprise for him when the dragon breathed out and burnt the aforementioned Babaji to a pile of ash on the floor.
so much for Baba J. Now, it might be the end of Baba J, but it's certainly not the end of the dragon. In fact, although it might have appeared huge in size to the unfortunate Baba J, it was really only a baby dragon. Its little green wings fluttered, and it came down from its present position above the table and settled on the floor, looking rather sadly at the remains of the magician. Hubert, because that's the name of the dragon, felt very sad and quite surprised, as Baba J had earlier, really. If Baba J was surprised for a moment, the dragon is surprised now. You see, Hubert had been happily sitting, having burnt toast to eat with his parents, somewhere else in this vast universe of ours, some parallel galaxy or something for those science fiction fans out there, a place where dragons fly free, when suddenly he had appeared in this dingy room in front of this strangely dressed man. He hadn't wanted to be here, still a bit hungry, and he realised he was responsible for murder. All in all, not a good day. And of even greater importance, he was hungry, he was lost, and he was missing his mum. And because all good stories should have a setting, and I haven't really told you where we are, or even when it is, well, the year is 1190. The place is Palestine. And it's not perhaps the best place to arrive in for poor old Hubert. But we've got two children in our story. One is called Asiya, and the other one is our cousin Harun. And they're really quite happy enough. Their life is fairly carefree. But their town is somewhat grubby, and you do have to watch out for the camels as you cross the street. And camel droppings are a constant hazard. But for 2 11-year-olds, life is quite good. They were rushing around in the early evening sunshine to complete all their jobs. And the last one was to run in and clean for Baba J, their neighbour. He pays quite well out of his earnings. He actually looks after people's feet, cuts their toenails and digs out their corns and things like that. You see, he never really made much money out of the magic. That never really took off. And the children, they liked his company. And they'd even been trusted with a door key. So Asiya skips along and arrives at the house first. Shall we knock? No, what's the point? He's always asleep. So she turns the key and she pushes the door open. And we have a scene of chaos which meets her eyes. Absolutely everything in the room is completely topsy-turvy. Harun, look at this. What's happened? Her cousin runs in and then froze to a stop. Tables were upturned. Books lay on the floor. But there, sitting on Baba J's bed, in the corner of the only room in the house, sits a green dragon. It had smallish wings, a scaly body and sharp teeth. Asiya had spotted it just after Harun, and she was very much wishing that she hadn't. And very much wishing that she hadn't closed the door behind her. Harun? Actually, I can see a dragon. Oh, good, said Harun rather nervously. I didn't like to say, unless I was imagining it. They stood together and they watched the dragon, who was keeping an eye on them, but seemed to be munching rather sadly a few pages from one of Babaji's books. It seems peaceful enough. But then you never know with dragons, whispered Harun, and his cousin nodded. Yeah, the thing is, at least this is how I see it. Where is Baba J and what are we going to do about it? Harun pointed to a little pile of still smoking ash on the floor. I wasn't actually going to show you this, unless you'd noticed anyway, but I think this was Baba J. You've got to look closely, but that thing over there on the bed has smoke coming out of it. Look, it's coming out of its nose. That thing, thought Hubert, what a cheek. He didn't enjoy being here. It wasn't as if he had been asked to come. And this thing that he was eating tasted dry and rather unappetizing. Help, Harun said, It's coming towards us. It was as well. In a rather ungainly way, the dragon was getting off the bed and snorting loudly, and it seemed to be making tracks towards them. Asir looked down at the ash below. One blow by it, and we're that as well. So just kind of stand still and just hope it goes away. The children and the dragon faced each other across the room. I wonder how it got here, said Haroon. I never knew Babajay couldn't magic anything at all. We all know he spoke a load of rubbish about the magic stuff. It must have worked this time, sadly for him. I suppose this book on the floor here would be the last thing he was reading. It's next to the chair by the ash. Asir picked up the book, and she stepped aside as the dragon moved towards them. Haroon sidestepped and opened the door for the dragon to leave, and sighed with relief as the animal simply went out of the door and turned right into the main street. Well, that's it gone. And now let's just wait 5 minutes to go home to bed. Asir looked at him with an expression, shall we say, that seemed to suggest disagreement. This book is Things to Bring from Other Worlds and Other Useful Spells, Volume 3, Beginner's Level. It's written by an Adam Namage. Now, we can't just leave the dragon. After all, we found him. He didn't do us any harm. He probably doesn't want to be here any more than we want him to be. He's probably dead by now anyway, Haroon replied. It's not as if everybody's just going to let a dragon walk down the main street without noticing or doing anything about it. As he said that, Asir, holding the book open at page 10, yelped and charged out into the street. She ran straight into a huge crowd, at the back of which was her mum. There you are. And you too, Haroon. Duta, your dad was looking for you. The whole world's gone mad. Dragons about in the main street, children running around way after bedtime. Now, Haroon, go straight home and no messing. And you, young lady, come back with me and be thankful I don't twist you right here, straight off. Asir's mother tended to talk very fast. The words left her at a speed far too fast to always understand. And she was twisting Asir's ear and standing on tiptoe to watch the local men tie up the unfortunate dragon and take it to the local barn for the night. Back at home, the house was buzzing with talk. The general opinion was that the dragon had arrived with the crusading armies that were in the Holy Land. The thing is, Asir's brother was saying, you can never trust these English. Some people say they actually don't wash and they smell like the rear end of a camel. There was much laughter and talk about, you know, the way of war. And some of the men were playing at a game of chess and the women of the house were chatting, quietly chatting, while sitting on the floor. They were actually quite a rich family. And the house had four rooms. So Asir was able to wriggle away from her mother and with her back holding the book carefully clasped under her arm, she was able to find a quiet room where the youngest members of the house were sleeping. To her surprise, she found the book not that difficult to read. Babajay had taught her and Haroon a few letters when she had gone round each day, and if they caught him in a good mood, and both of the children were able to read basic texts. Now, what caught her eye was a spell on page 10. It was for the bringing up of strange creatures. And it read like this, with, you have to imagine this now, a certain squirreling script with a lot of sort of symbols and unusual lines around the outside. For the magic of a creature. Large size. Just sit back and relax. Think only of the air. 2. Be the air. 3. Whisper,
animus magicus hocus arrivus. 3. Light a candle. 4. As you watch the scene, the smoke will rise. Think of the animal that you wish to surface. Important point. For all beginners, be very careful what you think of at this point. Considering that the rest of the book seemed to be full of worthless spells, like how to get rid of ugly spots at the end of your nose, or how to stop an idiot speaking for a week, Azir felt that this was really a very dangerous spell to be in it at all. Voices were coming from the room next to her. They're going to get a knight to fight the dragon tomorrow. Bit of a spectacle. Bring in a few tourists. Who's doing the job? Sir Graham de Lance, a Christian over here with Richard the First. He comes on recommendation. And as he's English, it doesn't really matter if the dragon wins. There was a general agreement and a lot of nodding and mmming and ahhing at this point. Absolutely. One less for our armies to fight. Mind you, they come and go. Like the dragon, I suppose. There was a lot of laughter now. And Azir couldn't really make out the rest of the conversation, clearly. She did know that she wasn't just going to let that dragon be killed in such a cruel way. She felt sorry for it, all bound up like that. Apparently, they'd tied a rope around its mouth so that it couldn't breathe out fire. And it really had looked very sad when she last saw it carried away on the main street. The thing was, and this was surprising really, there was no spell available for telling you how to get rid of or how to send it back to where it came from. She slipped into what passed off as her night things. She washed, she said her prayers, but as she slipped into sleep, the voices from the other side of the wall were once again clearly heard. He'll use a lance. One charge and it should be dead. Huh? Or one big breath and he'll be cooked to a cinder in his own armour. Yeah. Change of scene. Hubert the dragon was not in a good mood. A knight tied up had left him restless, and there was no toast for breakfast, which had left him mad. Also, he was really, really missing his mum and dad desperately, and a little tear rolled down the dragon's cheek, and he had never felt so miserable. They'd caught him as soon as he'd gone out of that room in Babaji's house, and people had screamed and a dozen men had just leapt on him with ropes. It really was all too confusing, seeing that he'd never asked to be here at all. He was only a baby after all. And then he was aware of that little girl and that little boy, and they were near him. And then he was taken away. And then he was aware of that same little girl sitting next to him now. She must have come in through the rear of the room that he was in, as there were guards at the front. And looking closely, he realised that yes, she was the girl from the house the other day. She was small and reading a book very intently. In fact, she seemed to be trying out a few rhymes to herself. "Oh, look, don't cry," she said. "It'll work out eventually. It's just finding the right pattern that seems to matter." Hubert, to be honest, was not that impressed. Now, some people might think that dragons are generally stupid creatures who do nothing but breathe smoke and fire all the time. But then again, how many have actually met one to be able to say? Hubert, even though he was little more than a baby, had just about worked out what had happened. And he felt that if his life depended on this human working out how to send him home again, then he was as good as dead. Let's see. Dragon be gone. Pocus, remove him. No, still here. Okay. What about, "Oh, creature from the deep, please be gone and give me sleep." No, that's not worked either.
I suppose it would only be any good if you were a fish. Then Hubert watched her wriggle back under the boards of the room. It was a wooden guard room, really, as the door opened and he was led out on a rope into the town's main square. There was a big crowd, a huge crowd, all backed around the square and hiding behind boards. And there on the other side of the square sat a man in shining clothes holding a big pole and sitting on a horse. A man came and pulled the ropes off him, and Hubert gave his wings a little flap. But this wasn't what life was all about. His tears had put out his fire. He could scarcely wave a puff of steam. Hubert couldn't see any way out. He hadn't even learnt to fly. Sir Graham Delance, on the other hand, had eaten an extremely good breakfast, and as he looked at his opponent, he was actually a little disappointed. He'd never met a dragon before, and in fact, he'd never actually expected to. It's all right reading about brave knights in fairy tale romances who kill them in great combat. But he'd come here to Palestine to fight against the great Saladin, and he was astonished to have a mass of local Arabs come up to him and offer him the chance to fight a dragon. And what a dragon! He'd expected something altogether bigger and better. This miserable creature, this hungry-looking thing that seemed almost to be crying, was hardly an opponent for a great man like himself. Still, you know, reputations are to be won, and how many of his friends had actually killed the dragon in one-to-one combat? Not one that he knew of. So it was better to just get the job done quickly, he supposed. Armour on, horse saddled up, wearing protection, all over, in a couple of minutes. Asir found Haru, and they were both sitting near the dragon at one end of their town centre. It was a little area with houses closely packed together. Their homes were a couple of streets away, and they watched sadly as the local children threw things at the poor dragon standing near them. "Nah, it's all over," said Harun. "I mean, if only we could just go backwards and return things to what they were." Asir turned and kind of looked at him. "Say that again." "I said if only we could make things what they were." No, not that bit. The bit at the beginning. "What, the bit about going backwards?"
"Yes."
Time was running out. Sir Graham Delance was making sure that his lance was sharp enough, and the crowd were getting restless.
"Get on with it!"
came a cry from near the children. It was her uncle, the balding Shakir Dutta. Asir rushed up to him. "Uncle, would you reach over and pass me that candle by that brave knight's table, please?" Her uncle grunted, but reached over. Then he stopped. Because, let's face it, when his niece said, "Could you pass me the candle?" she kind of meant, "Would you please walk through the crowd and bring me the candle?" And he didn't feel like doing it. Why? Asir looked at him in her most appealing way, the way that she usually managed to get what she wanted. "I want it as a memory of the brave knight killing the dragon. Oh, please, uncle, and be quick before the other children try to get it, because they all want it." Shakir Dutta nodded, and he moved over to get the candle. The crowd parted because he was, frankly, a massive man, and he came back just as the fight was about to begin. The still-lit candle was passed to Asir, and Shakir turned round to see the knight starting to charge the dragon. He didn't see Asir bend down and open an old book. Well, this serve's got to work first time, and it had better be right. Now, first of all, I think very carefully about the dragon going home. Next, I put the candle out, with my fingers.
She was nearly distracted by a roar from the crowd as Sir Graham, on his horse, made his first contact with the dragon. He'd just cut the dragon's wing, nothing serious. He'd done it for effect, so to get the crowd going, you know, and make it look as if it was more of a battle than it actually was. But as he turned his horse round, he knew next time he'd aim at the dragon's heart. Now then, I whisper a Rivus Hocus Magical Animalus. Sit back and gosh, what's this? Be the air? And as she whispered and did her best to be the air, the words she said made something interesting happen. Sir Graham charged forward and was met not by a dragon, but by steam rising in front of him. He presumed it was a track, but a trick, actually, by the dragon, and he carried on. He went straight through and just came out the other side. The crowd all had a sense of missing something very important. Where was the dragon? They decided it must have flown away, only no one ever saw it go. As the crowd went away, they wouldn't pay Sir Graham. They also didn't give him any supper, which made him kind of sad. Hubert the dragon, on the other hand, arrived just as quickly as he went away, back home with his mum and dad. He got a good telling off, I can tell you, for being away so long and letting his breakfast go cold, but like all mums and dads, they'd been really rather worried about him and were pleased to see him home. And they did not believe the crazy story he told them about where he'd been. They thought he'd been away, playing silly games, and had got his wing cut. Serve you right, they said. But Hubert, he was happy and relieved, and he promised never to go away again. He ate a hearty meal of burnt toast and felt a lot better. But we should really return to the person whose fault it was in the first place. When the whispered words reversing the spell were said by a seer, Barbier found himself once again in his room. He was sitting surrounded by his untidiness and feeling as if he was missing a day somewhere in his memory. There was knocking at his door, and two children that he knew well let themselves in and told him all about it. "I'm really pleased that you're here again," Haroon said. "It was really me that saved your life. I was the one who told the seer what to do." "Yeah, that is right," smiled the seer. "I kept trying to say Departus, you see, to tell the dragon to go, when actually I only needed to turn the spell around to tell it to arrive home again." Babaji nodded sagely, as if he understood. "You've both done very well." A seer looked at him right in the eyes. "Babaji, no more magic, please." The magician smiled. "No more magic, Asir. I'll stick to looking after people's feet from now on. I think I'd better throw those books away. After all, I may actually be able to do magic. After all, I just think about what might happen next time." The friends laughed, and after a little while, what had seemed so real became to the children a memory that they wondered about. And the townspeople tried to make money out of the dragon story, but it lacked conviction without the dragon. So stories are told and endings change. And you know, in a different telling, the dragon becomes wicked and cruel, and the knight, brave and kind and well-fed, gets paid. Only the two children and a failed magician known Barbier tend to get missed out of the tale. And that's maybe just as well. The children didn't want the attention. The magician doesn't deserve the attention. And maybe that's the way it should be. I mean, who believes in dragons after all? The end. Well, as I say, I've not, you know, I wrote that back in 1987. Since. That's what comes when you move house and open boxes. I quite liked it. I hope you did.
news and views to finish with. If you liked it, pop a like on my page there on the Podomatic, or on iTunes. I love iTunes reviews because they put me up the ranking on iTunes. Write me a little comment on the pod page. And as I say, I might do a bit of horror next time. I might do an Edgar Allan Poe, or I might do a scary story of some sort. I think I probably should. I think we've done a few children's ones now. I might do a grown-up one next time. I'm going to finish on a poem. So it's a bit more grown-up-y, this. So if children are listening, I think possibly not for you, maybe. This comes from me getting older, which happens to all of us as grown-ups know. And it was an accusation, really, that somebody gave me the other day, and they said, you know, what are you? What are you? What are you? And it wasn't very nice, and it made me think, yeah, what am I? And I went away, and as I sometimes do, I kind of sat and played around with the idea of a poem, and here we go. What are you? Okay, I'm not a success, but I don't need to be anymore. I just need to find myself. What am I? I'm getting older and I feel it in my bones, but I'm younger today than I will be tomorrow. And I'm not a rich man, but I'm rich in certain ways. So don't judge me by money. That's not the mantra that I keep. So what am I? A bird within a cage, a ship adrift at sea. Someone who is always outside the box. Rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief. What am I? Can I find a role to anchor me? Okay. I know it. I'm Dad. Yeah, so there we are. A poem to end with, and that ends today's podcast. I'll look around and try and do another one in a few weeks' time. I must try to make them a little bit more regular again. God bless all of you. And if any of you, as I say, I don't do any crowdfunding, never ask for anything. But if you listen, if you enjoy it, and you've got PayPal, and you'd like to say, hey, Mark, have a cup of coffee on me. Do like the toffee lattes at McDonald's, actually. Even though I don't eat much McDonald's food at all, they do a lovely toffee latte. It costs, I think, $1.80 or something like that. If you ever fancy popping me that over on PayPal, it would be nice, you know. It would just be a thank you. And who knows, if I get a little bit, I might even get some better recording equipment. My PayPal again, lowercase letters, E-M Chambers, C-H-A-M-B-E-R-S, 1966, @gmail.com. And I'd appreciate it. God bless. Take care. See you soon. Bye-bye, everybody.